you. Thank you very much. Allow me at the beginning, as is tradition, to share with you a couple of housekeeping thoughts and remarks. May we request you to put your cell phones on silent if possible, and as my colleagues put it, please create another form of buzz by either tweeting about what's going on here and what's being discussed, or by posting on your respective Facebook pages. I would also like, or we would also like to welcome all those who are joining us today via webcast from wherever they may happen to be right now. And we invite all those viewers to send us any questions that you or they may have so that we can ensure their full and active participation in our conversation. Please do send us your questions either to our Facebook page, UNDPI NGOs Partners for Change, or by using the Twitter hashtag DPI NGO. The social media addresses should also be appearing on the screen, or they are appearing on the screen. Today's session is being organized in observance of UN Human Rights Day, which is, as you know, celebrated each year on the 10th of December. This year's celebration marks the 20th anniversary of the Vienna Declaration, which was a landmark moment in the field of human rights. It was in my own hometown, Vienna, 20 years ago at the World Conference on Human Rights that non-governmental organizations spearheaded the drive for the creation of the post of UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, to ensure that an independent, authoritative voice would speak out against human rights violations wherever they may occur. I happened to have been in Washington, D.C. at that time at the Austrian Embassy in the run-up to this conference, and I had the privilege of meeting with many of your colleagues to help prepare the Vienna conference and their active participation in that conference. Ever since that time, the Office of the High Commissioner has worked tirelessly to do just that, as well as to coordinate and support the work on a range of human rights issues and bodies. Today I have the honor, as mentioned earlier, and the pleasure of introducing my colleague and friend, Assistant Secretary General for Human Rights, Mr. Ivan Simonovic. He was appointed the head of the UN Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights in New York, in July of 2010. Before joining the United Nations, Ivan served as Minister of Justice in Croatia. He had been Deputy Minister in his country for Foreign Affairs. He was also Croatia's permanent representative to the United Nations in New York, where he held the position of Senior Vice President and President of the UN Economic and Social Council from 2001 to 2003. Mr. Simonovic was also professor with the Faculty of Law at the University of Zagreb, where he served as head of the Legal Theory Department, Vice Dean and Vice Rector for International Cooperation. And he has published extensively in the field of international relations, law, human rights, and the development of national institutions. To discuss the role that NGOs can play in promoting human rights, it is now my pleasure and honor to warmly welcome Mr. Simonovic and to request him to speak to us. Ivan, please.
Thank you very much. I, as agreed with Peter, I will be speaking briefly to leave enough time for your questions and for discussion. You have seen High Commissioner for Human Rights, Navi Pillay, on the screen. She intended to be with you today for this occasion. However, I am sure you understand that she had to be with Mandela for this last time. Now, I thank very much for Department of Public Information for organizing this event. It is extremely timely. As was already told, it is 20th anniversary of Vienna, of its declaration and action plan. And it was a watershed for human rights. Now, these anniversaries are a great opportunity for stock-taking, to see what have we achieved since 1993, but also to identify what we didn't achieve and to discuss challenges ahead. Now, let me start with summarizing some of achievements. And for this, I think the best introduction is a quote of former Secretary General Kofi Annan, who said that without development, there is no security. Without security, there is no development. And you cannot have either without respect for human rights. This has been acknowledged widely. It didn't stay on the level of just words. It's more and more recognized within the United Nations system. And I will just give you two illustrations of recent recognition of the importance of human rights. Let me start with recognition of importance of human rights and its relation to security. Human rights are relevant for the whole conflict cycle, for preventing conflict cycle, then also for the most efficient ways to end conflict and to prevent them from reoccurring. How to use human rights in sense of prevention of conflict? If anything is clear from the Arab Spring, is that people all over the world are aware that they are entitled to some human rights, be they political and civil or social and economic. People feel that they are entitled to choose their own governments, that they are entitled to decent salary for their work, that they are entitled to get education for their children, and also to get health services. When people are deprived of all those rights, they will sooner or later, they will protest, they will rebel, and there will be confrontations. Now, respect for human rights is therefore a precondition for peace and stability. If human rights are being violated, sooner or later, we will be having emerging conflicts or instabilities. We also are learning to use human rights violations as early indicators of forthcoming threats to peace and security. Just these days, Secretary General is rolling out his so-called Rights Up Front Action Plan. The main idea is to put human rights in the center of conflict prevention activity. So we should improve our data gathering of human rights violations. We should improve our ability to analyze those information and also to bring them to the attention of member states, including Security Council, to take preventive action to prevent emerging conflict. Now, if conflict already started, there is a damage control to be done. So what we do is that we report on human rights violations, and those reports, monitoring and reporting, is highly relevant for the Security Council to take appropriate action. Now, indicate how Security Council also acknowledge the importance of human rights information is that between 1993, when our office was established, and the year of 2010, which means about 17 years, we have briefed, as Office of High Commissioner for Human Rights, not more than 10 times Security Council. From then on, about each year, approximately, we inform Security Council in various formats of briefings on the human rights violations that are indicators of threats to peace and stability about 10 to 12 times. So each year, what was previously done in 17 years. Now, it's not only in the area of peace and security that the importance of human rights is being acknowledged. The same applies to the developmental area. Now that we are intensively discussing a developmental agenda post-2015, there were various consultations held all over the world, regional consultations, national workshops. There was not a single consultation that I'm aware of where the importance of human rights has not been emphasized within a framework of a developmental agenda. Why is this? Because it's being acknowledged that if you discriminate women who are over half of population, if you discriminate disabled persons, if you discriminate minorities, it's not only a moral issue, it's not only a legal issue, it's also developmental issues. You are not using resources that can be put to use for developmental purposes. Also, in these 20 years, we have witnessed strengthening of human rights mechanisms. For example, speaking about international treaties on human rights and respective protocols. Since 1993, the number of those treaties and protocols tripled. There are three times more than there were 1993. And of course, it's very difficult to calculate, but the number of countries that have ratified and that they are now obliged with these obligations that they have undertaken themselves has grown even faster. And there was an increase in special procedures mandate in sense of various special rapporteurs on country situations where countries are facing some human rights problems or thematic issues such as water and sanitation, health, education, and so on. There were new forms of fact-finding that were spreading, and I'm speaking of fact-finding missions and commissions of inquiry, which when there is an emergency and grave human rights violations in countries, they provide for thorough reports on root causes of violations that are taking place, on the scale of violations, on their legal qualifications, and on their likely perpetrators. So they are, in a way, paving the way for the accountability for the crimes that are being committed. At the moment, we have such commissions of inquiry. We have it on Syria, we have it on DPRK, and we have it on Central African Republic. We have also witnessed a strengthening of international law, including international criminal law. Since 1993, an International Criminal Tribunal for former Yugoslavia, to be followed by Tribunal for Rwanda, we have various international ad hoc criminal tribunals. We had some mixed tribunals, which were mixed, consisting of international judges and domestic judges. And that was all paving the way for international criminal court. Rome Statute has been adopted in 2002, and it is a permanent international criminal court. It was not established for one country situation. It was established to last for all situations that would be emerging and requiring attention of international criminal court. The idea of international criminal court is complementarity. It's a duty of states themselves to address violations, to address crimes that are being committed. However, if member states are either unable or unwilling to do that themselves, then it's a duty of International Criminal Court to react. Of course, another major innovation is the creation of Human Rights Council, which is a subsidiary organ of General Assembly, but with a great leverage. And it conducts a universal periodic review, among other things, which means that it's a sort of peer control between member states themselves. So when member states deal with treaty bodies, they deal with expert bodies. When they deal with universal periodic review, it's their peers, other member states, that once in 4 years ask them questions about their human rights record and then issue a set of recommendations what they should do to improve human rights situation. And now we have started the second cycle, and what is important is to review whether those recommendations have been followed. In sense, this is how international human rights law develops. We have more and more treaties. We have certain human rights which are becoming a part of international customary law. And what we do as Human Rights Office is that we try to support member states with technical cooperation to implement those human rights obligations, but we also monitor and report if there are violations. In this respect, Office of High Commissioner also expanded, so we are present now in 60 countries, and we have about 500 people in our Geneva and New York headquarters, about 500 people who are in the field around the world in those 60 presences, and we have about 800 human rights staff who are included either in Department of Peacekeeping missions all over the world or in Department of Political Affairs, so-called political missions. So in 18 missions around the world, we have additional 800 people who are doing human rights work, and we are backstopping them from our headquarters. Now, something worthwhile mentioning also is the change of role of civil society. In those 20 years, the role of civil society has tremendously increased. In 1993, it was still difficult to imagine the achievements that civil society, when better globally organized, organized through social media, organized through joint action, and the impact it can have in member states as well as in the United Nations. Just two examples that I was personally witnessing. It was the campaign on landmines. It started that when there was initiative to ban landmines, of course, how it happens is that initiative takes place in New York, then diplomats report to ministries of foreign affairs, ministries of foreign affairs report to government, government reports to Ministry of Defense reports to chiefs of general staff. The messages from general staff, Ministry of Defense, following the same change was not a chance. We need landmines to protect us if there is a more numerous enemy in protection concepts. We have envisaged the use of landmines. So the answer is no. So did that initiative die because of military? No. No. We had mobilization of civil society. We had, for example, Princess Diana at the time, who was mobilizing, going around, showing to the world pictures of children who every day stay without their limbs, without their lives because of landmines. And pressure of civil society then had a tremendous influence in member states, because in democratic member states, if there is public opinion who is requesting something, then it's presidents and prime ministers who say to the military, no, no, we need politically to support that, and there is a civilian control over military. So you will have to make new plans how to deal with your security without landmines. Similar was with ICC. There was a strong coalition, civil society coalition, pushing for international criminal court. When this initiative started, diplomats were joking about it. Here in New York, diplomats were joking about unrealistic ideas that are coming from human rights circles and from academia, and it's completely unrealistic, and it did happen. It did happen because of civil society, because media support, and it finally made the change. I see that I have overstepped already time for initial presentation, so I just would like to say there are many things we didn't achieve. We have tremendous problems with climate change that we are not properly addressing. We have increased inequality within countries and globally, which are destabilizing factors internally and globally. And finally, we still have mass atrocities that are not being prevented and not adequately addressed. So what are the limitations in human rights area? And I will say for my office for human rights, it is nice to say that human rights are the third pillar of the United Nations, that besides security, besides development, third pillar are human rights. However, when it becomes a budget issue, out of regular budget for the United Nations, third pillar gets 3% of the budget. So it's a rather tiny pillar. Yesterday I participated in a discussion where people were saying, but you know, human rights are now in our genes. And I said, that's wonderful. Let us have them in the budget as well. I thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Ivan, for your very insightful remarks. May we now open the floor to your questions. May I request you to please introduce yourself and the organization you're representing, and please, in the interest of many questions, keep your comments and your questions as short as possible. Please. Yeah, madam.
My name is Fatima Rodrigo, and I represent International Presentation Association. My question is about right to participate, which is in the declaration, UDHR. Right to participate, leaving no one behind, requires a participatory forum for the most vulnerable. Today, there is the most vulnerable people are denied of participatory forum. They have no access to participatory forum. The governance structure is so big, they don't have a smaller structure for participation. Could you please have some thoughts on that? Thank you.
Would you prefer a couple of questions at the same time or respond?
However you prefer. We can have a couple of questions.
Yeah. May we ask?
Yeah.
Are there any further questions? Yes, madam. The button in front of you.
Okay, now I think it's on. Latifa Woodhouse, I represent Ribbon International, and I'm originally from Afghanistan. I was born and brought up, and I really enjoyed your presentation about human rights. Thank you very much. You mentioned in your presentation that you have covered Central Africa, Syria, and nothing came about Afghanistan. And right now, I have been asked, as a women's group representative from Afghanistan, just recently there were two women naked, hung to the tree and killed. What is the UN, especially the Human Rights Commission, stand on such atrocity that is happening again and again in that poor, poverty-stricken country?
Thank you, Madam. Yes, please. I'm sorry.
Is it the center button?
The lady. Sorry, the lady in the second row.
I'm Pauline Campbell with Peace Action. I did work on the landmine campaign. And my question is, what has happened to the United States? We never joined the ratification of the landmine treaty. And how does that affect the success of it, since we're the largest military in the world? We spend more than anybody else in the world combined on military. So I don't look at it as a real great success story because we've forgotten about it here in the United States.
Thank you, Madam. Ivan, please, maybe. Just two questions.
Let me start in chronological order with the question. Let me first address the issue of right to participation. It's a right that applies both to political and civil and social and economic rights. The rights to participate in political life, the right to vote, the right to be elected. And this is a right which is not only the issue of law, that you proclaim that everybody can participate, but you have to do something about it to enable everyone to meaningful, in reality, participate in political life. So when we discuss political rights, we still have, in a number of countries, a problem with participation of women in political life, their representation in parliaments, inclusion in government, or you speak about Afghanistan, in ensuring that women are included in political negotiations with Taliban. Because this is the best way to ensure that women's rights are not going to be used as a bargaining chip in political negotiations and in peace settlement. But there is also the issue of participation in social and economic life, and a lot of people in contemporary world do not have full access. In fact, the modern definition of poverty are not the ones that stay in defining poverty as just a quantitative indicator. So whoever is below $1 or $5 or $10 is poor. But it's lack of access. It's lack of access to economic opportunities. It's lack of choices. It's lack of access to education, which then reflects in perpetuating the cycle of poverty. It's also the issue that at the moment we have disabled persons who are deprived of meaningful participation in social and economic life. For example, all over the world, it's over 80% of people who are, for example, deaf, who do not have any schooling at all, which is a waste of human resources. Yesterday, the day before yesterday, on 10th, we have a wonderful laureate of Human Rights Prize this year, who is a doctor of science, and she's absolutely brilliant. She's deaf, and it doesn't, you wouldn't recognize that as any sort of a problem. So in the issue of participation in both political and economic activities, we have a long way to go. And I think that especially now when discussing post-2015 economic agenda. This should be in the core of our discussion. And of course, I, from ethical point of view, completely agree with the John Rawls position, who says that a good society is the society where the ones who are worst off, so the most vulnerable, as you put it, are the ones who are at the best possible standing, which means that it's not necessarily a completely egalitarian society, because without some economic incentives, not even they are better off. But you must leverage. You must leverage the system in order to ensure the improvement of situations of the ones who are worst off. And this exactly should be in the center of our debates, how to develop a new 2015 development agenda, that we should not concentrate ourselves only on the issue of economic growth. If economic growth does not serve the people, then what's the benefit of economic growth? Do we need a developmental paradigm that is oriented only on growth, on the crazy competition, and on draining of non-renewable resources? Or we need a human-centered growth which takes into account human needs and especially needs of most vulnerable population. Afghanistan. I was mentioning countries where there is a commission of inquiry. So we have a commission of inquiry established by the Human Rights Council in DPRK and in case of Syria, and just a week ago, Security Council established commission of inquiry on Central African Republic. In Afghanistan, we have a large human rights component, which is very much engaged in the human rights issue in Afghanistan. In fact, this is the first country where we started systematic reporting on civilian casualties. So we are reporting on each and every civilian casualties, segregated sexes of casualties. We are identifying how persons were killed, and we identify who were the perpetrators. We cannot identify individuals, but we can identify whether those were pro-government or anti-government forces, or whether those were international forces. What's the benefit of that? I will illustrate. When I was in Afghanistan, I participated in the presentation of this yearly report. Through that reporting, we had an indication that something more can be done, for example, that international forces should introduce additional measures to prevent civilian casualties. I was able to discuss with General Petraeus at the time what new measures can be introduced, and it was very successful, and civilian casualties caused by international forces have been decreasing. I think that our reporting contributed to that as well. But you wouldn't believe that also we had Talibans who were very concerned about our reporting and were also providing us information or criticizing our reporting. Oh, for that incident, it was not us. We should... So you do engage people with such reporting, and it is shameful when you are targeting civilians. On our activities in Afghanistan, I was in Afghanistan, I think High Commissioner was a couple of months ago in Afghanistan. So we also, through advocacy at the top level, we try to involve in human rights issue. When I was discussing with President Karzai, on top of my agenda at the time were women's issues. At the time, there was initiative to close safe houses for women, which are of tremendous importance because of a large amount of early marriages because of unacceptable amount of violence against women, and women have nowhere to go. So if women run, or girls run away from homes because they do not want at the age of 10 be married, or if a husband beats them, or if they are maltreated by their in-laws or their own parents, if they do not go to the closest relative, but to somebody else, to a house of a friend or of a more remote relative, there is a presumption that those girls or women are involved in so-called zina, which means putative zina. It's a presumption that they are running away because they want to have extramarital affair, which is punishable by law. And when I went to prisons, prisons for minors and prisons for women. In prison for minors, majority of girls who were incarcerated there were there for presumed zina. So it was also an issue that I raised with President Karzai. With women's shelters, I was successful. With this issue with zina, I was not. So We are trying, and I think that in light of negotiations and future of Afghanistan after 2014, it's extremely important to solidify human rights gains and to do whatever we can that in peace settlement human rights are not being forgotten. On landmines treaty, it's similar to other important human rights treaties that as long as it's a treaty, some member states may decide not to undertake obligations under treaty. But the more countries accept certain international treaties, the more we contribute to the emergence of customary law. So one day I am positive that it won't be necessary for landmines and from many other human rights violations, it won't be necessary for member states to willingly accept such an obligation. It will be treated as a customary international law. My dream is to have that for international criminal justice as well. Now, in this moment, we have International Criminal Court, which is binding only to member states who have ratified the Rome Statute. It is also binding for states on whose territory are captured people who are indicted by ICC. But some still can feel that if they are not prosecuted by their own national justice system, if they continue sitting in their country, there is no international tribunal that can get hold of them. I believe that in next 20 years, we may have, if we all push for it, an international criminal court with universal jurisdiction without the need for member states to consent on that.
Thank you so much, Ivan. The gentleman in the first row. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I have what I suppose is a procedural problem with human rights. I represent an NGO that has filed an application with human rights relative to a extraordinary problem. I represent them in Geneva, and I brought it to the NGO coordinator, who is very, very nice, and she brought me to the African expert, Mr. Brian Ruhen, and they were very, very helpful. The application complaint was filled out, and then it was, I suppose, sent upward, and we don't hear from it. It is an acute problem. Okay, I use the words of a physician, which I am. I'm not a lawyer. But people are being killed every day. There's literally the beginning of a Holocaust involved with this problem. But after it passed the initial people, we have heard nothing. The original people apologized to us, saying it has to go through channels, and I would like to know how to get it through channels very, very quickly, even if I can, rather than going through the bottom, can leave the problem with you and call you at a later date when you feel I'll be in Geneva after the 15th of January.
Thank you so much, sir. Ivan will, I think, straight away answer the general question and then bilaterally with you. Sure, but the specific case. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
My name is Daniel Conway. I am a student of Manhattanville College. First, I would like to...
If you keep the main button, just press...
I would like to thank... Oh, sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt. I'd like to thank the gentleman speaking who did a lot in or across the world, including Afghanistan. Second, I wanted to pose a question. You talked about Afghanistan and what was achieved. However, being a student of history, I would like to ask, following the withdrawal of coalition forces, do you see the progress which was achieved being rolled back almost as in the post-Reconstruction American South? I hope you can get back to me on that.
If I understood it correctly, your question was related to progress achieved in the American South?
In Afghanistan.
May we request you to just repeat the question? You can remain seated. Yes. You can remain seated, but close to the microphone.
Good. You have a mic.
Yeah.
Once coalition forces are withdrawn, do you see the human rights that were achieved being rolled back?
Thank you so much. Please.
One of the more vulnerable sectors of society. We should have
not more vulnerable.
Thank you for... asking me. My name is Roger Pugh. I'm with Lawyers Without Borders, and I wanted to hear more about how civil society can work with the Human Rights Office, both in general and also in Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Madam, please.
Okay, thank you. Mike, I have two questions. My name is Regina Tapuchi. I'm from the International Association for Jewish Lawyers and Jurists. And my first question was very similar to the gentleman, Lawyers Without Borders. You mentioned civil society and the role it can play in promoting human rights, but your example dealt with countries... or you mentioned countries that were democratic in nature and therefore the civil society has leverage with the government. What happens in non-democratic societies? Because most of the atrocities in the world that occur are in non-democratic societies. So how does civil society play a role there? And my second question was far more practical, and that is, what is the Human Rights Commission doing on the issue of Syrian refugees? And this is a far more practical issue, because at the moment now it's a terrible humanitarian problem. It's freezing, it's snowing, these are people living in tents, and the countries where they are situated cannot deal with the economic problems or the burden that it incurs. What is the Human Rights Commission doing about that? Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. Ivan, please.
Let me address first the issue of accreditation of NGOs. I think what you are referring to is accreditation by Economic and Social Council, to be accredited by Economic and Social Council. I'm familiar with the problem because I was president of ECOSOC in year 2002, so I am familiar with the procedure. There is a committee consisting of member states who provides for accreditation. So there is a possibility that they turn down some requests for accreditation. However, whether accreditation is approved or turned down, you should be informed, and we can help you and identify what was the problem with your case. No problem whatsoever. You can communicate to my colleague, give us your information, and we can inform you accordingly. About Afghanistan and human rights after 2015, I am very concerned. I think that we should do whatever we can to solidify gains, to have human rights voice present and included in the negotiations, including various groups in Afghan society, including women, including various ethnic groups, and so on. But is there a threat? Yes, there is. I am quite concerned. In some areas, we had more. In some areas, we had less success in Afghanistan. For example, one area where I think we failed is rule of law area. And we simply did not manage to help Afghanistan in all those years where a lot of resources were invested to develop a reliable justice system. And it's shame that even brutal but swift justice as dispensed by Taliban was to some common people preferable than having no justice at all or corruption that still exists in the Afghan justice system and, of course, huge backlog and waiting for tens of years for your case to be heard. How can civil society work with Human Rights Office in general and in Africa? In general, here in New York, we have quarterly consultations with civil society. And it's not consultations in sense that we just report what was happening in last 3 months. What we want to discuss are forthcoming events. What major forthcoming things in human rights area will be happening in next quarter of a year? We discuss with you, we provide you with information and discuss how to affect those developments from human rights perspective. And I hope that we can project on the screen our contact email address. We have a number of human rights specific non-governmental organizations who are regularly attending our briefing. But if it's any of you who would like to be regularly invited to our regular briefings, we would be happy to have you with us. And of course, it's no obligations. Once you register, you will be receiving those mails and see whether you are interested in issues to be discussed or not. So it's just an opportunity, no obligation whatsoever. So I encourage you to register. And of course, we are discussing also on these meeting countries' situation and taking into account challenges in Africa. Africa is quite often on our agenda. The issue on how to address human rights violations in non-democratic states. We are doing that on a regular basis. In some non-democratic states, we have our field presences. And in fact, quite a number of them are in states that could not be considered democratic along usual criteria. So how do you do it? Our approach is that you should be combining two things. It's discreet diplomacy and naming and shaming. So discreet diplomacy, in a sense, when you have cases to be raised with the government saying, please, we have been informed that torture is going on in this and that prison. We are hearing that chief of your intelligence is encouraging torture. We are hearing this and that. And then we say, listen, do something about it. If you do not, we have no other choice than to go public with it. And then, of course, if they do not do, you have to go. But it's a delicate balance. When to use discreet diplomacy, when to name and shame. I think that if you do name and shame in some occasions, that increases leverage of your discreet diplomacy because they know that you will not keep silent. Now, sometimes the question is whether resident coordinators or special representative of Secretary General are keen to address human rights questions. Well, sometimes it may be a problem for them because they can be PNG'd, proclaimed persona non grata, and kicked out of the country. So in that case, you know, they tend to be hesitant. So we were discussing that very thoroughly with them. We are all parts of the same team. And when we consider together that there is a serious danger for UN representatives to raise some human rights issues, then we just do not ignore them, but we will raise them from New York or from Geneva. So United Nations, in my view, should not be all speaking in the same voice, what we often repeat, but we should be speaking in harmony. We must go further as Human Rights Office in protection of human rights than rest of the United Nations system, but we have our special role, just as other parts of the United Nations system have their roles. On Syrian refugees and what to do with Syrian refugees. It's a very dire situation at the moment. Unfortunately, the weather forecast is that it's going to be one of the coldest waves in the last couple of years in Syria, where we have a lot of displaced persons and also affecting neighboring countries. And it's a huge problem. The situation of refugees is very bad. Some of them, especially children, especially young women, are being subjected either to forced labor or to commercial sex activities or trading sex activities to get elementary humanitarian to satisfy their humanitarian needs. I myself intend to visit refugee camps in the neighboring countries, so I intend to visit Lebanon, Jordan, and Iraq in January this year and to address these issues. And of course, you know, there is a problem when you speak about refugees, then you are criticizing countries who are doing their best to accommodate those refugees. And this is a problem you raised as well. It's an economic problem, as you rightly point out. but it's also becoming a political problem. Some of those countries are really politically destabilized by tremendous amount of refugees. We are not doing enough to provide those countries with necessary humanitarian aid as well as financial support for what they are doing for refugees. Turkey can handle this matter because it's a large country, but what about Lebanon? What about Jordan? What about Iraq? And some analysts are saying that now in Iraq and Lebanon especially, we do not have to speak anymore about spillover from conflict from Syria, but that we are speaking about one theater of war, which is becoming very disturbing.
Thank you so much, Ivan. Now, we are both aware that your tradition is to have a little bit longer time with us and to be able to ask questions. Given that Ivan has come in last minute in place of the High Commissioner, Ivan had scheduled a meeting before that he has to attend to, so we really apologize and will revert back to your longer time frame next time around. I think I speak on behalf of all of us if we thank the Assistant Secretary General for his presentation.
And register so we can continue our discussion.
And thank you so much for attending. I think all of us have learned a lot, and it has broadened our understanding for the extremely important work that is being undertaken by the Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day and get home safely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. For those of us that are still in the room, maybe we can get started. Yes, can we move up front? And I'll ask Dr. Marion Norton to also join me. Okay, hello again, everyone. Welcome to the networking segment of today's program. For those of us who do not know me, I'm Howard Diallo from the NGO Relations section, and my primary responsibility is to do these briefings for you. So before we get started, though, I'd like to invite Dr. Mary Norton from the NGO DPI Executive Committee to give any announcements, if there are any. Thank you. I'm being told that there aren't any, so she'll keep me company while I'm up here. But I also want to inform everybody that today the special events and advocacy section of DPI is going to hold an informal session on the commemorations of the Rwanda genocide. That will take place in the NGO Relations Resource Center from 1 to 2 p.m. So if human rights, Rwanda, or the genocide issue is the area where you work or is of any interest to you, we would suggest that you attend, and all are invited. Now, we had a lot of great information that was given to us, and given the interaction we had on human rights, the NGO Relations has been thinking, how can we sort of continue the discussion on topics of the briefings? And one of the things that we decided to do is to come up with a networking activity today. I know that as you came in, everybody received a yellow, a different color labels. You may have received a yellow or a pink or a green one that had a number on it, and probably had the name of an NGO Relations staff member. For example, the yellow tag had Crystal's name on it, perhaps. And these are all color-coordinated because we want you to get into different working groups. So what we want to do really is to take advantage of all the interest, the knowledge that you have on the human rights issue, and to continue the debate, to see how we can deepen our knowledge, and also to find out what everybody is doing in this area, and to make sure that as NGO and civil society that we're interacting around issues that are important to all of us. So what we suggested is that we break up into different groups, depending on the colors that we have, and that we're going to discuss and share information on the human rights issue. And we would appreciate if, once everybody is finished discussing, that you identify one or two rapporteurs within your group that will come back and report to us. I think for us in the NGO section, we look at it as a way to find out what you're doing, but also for you to give us some feedback in terms of the issues, for example, on human rights, the areas you would like us to focus on going forward. So I hope this is something that you find interesting and that you find useful. Okay, so let me go now. See, I have a challenge because I have to put on my glasses to read, and then when I put them on, I can't see you. So let's see. Now, I gave the example of Crystal, who is yellow. That's Crystal's group. So everybody who has yellow, find your way over to Crystal. Find yourselves and move over to her side. Then I have orange, if you got that one. That's Christina. And I have purple. That's Swati. I have green, that is Felipe. And I have a color, it's a bit of a red, dark rose, that's Donella. And then I have blue, which is Erica. So again, I have blue, Erica, reddish pink, Donella, green, Felipe, purple, Swati, yellow, Crystal, and orange, Christina. Oh, my God. You see what I told you guys? I'm blind. And white would be Catherine. Catherine Good. I think that's the... That's the reddish pink one. Yeah. Now, you know, a lot of... As you're looking at your colors... So as you're looking at your colors and looking for members in your group, once you get settled down, we wanted to take advantage of everybody being here and all the good skills you learned from last week in the powerful communications workshop we had, which was co-organized by the Subcommittee on Communications for the Executive Committee and led by Catherine White. We wanted to stop for a few moments and to tweet. And to tweet around human rights issues that have been discussed today. So before we move into our groups, I'm going to ask my colleague Erica Rose to just walk us through that so that we will stop, tweet for a few minutes, and then we'll move into our working groups. Thank you, Erica.
Okay, thank you. Is the PowerPoint going to be on the screen? I'll just say next, if that's okay. It'll be 1 minute. Okay, so this is just going to be a quick 1 minute tutorial on how to tweet. So it would be great if you guys can tweet within your groups. If you're going to be in my group, we will be learning how to tweet. So don't worry, this is just a really quick tutorial. So first thing is you create a Twitter account or sign in by going to twitter.com. You press next. To create a tweet, once you open your page, this is what it will look like. If you look where the two red arrows are, that's where you're going to write in your tweet. If you can press next. The third part is when you go to compose a tweet, this is what it looks like. And what we mean by adding a hashtag, you're going to be putting like the pound sign in front of a topic or a name or something you're talking about. So for example, this tweet is talking about human rights. And we want everyone in the world to see that our tweet is talking about human rights. So we're putting a hashtag in front of human rights. We also want the NGO Human Rights Watch to know that we're tweeting about them. So we're going to also add them into the tweet by putting the at sign because their account is HRW. So we put at HRW. And next. Once you tweet it, it comes up onto your main page. So if you go under me, it shows all the tweets that you have done. And if you click next, this is where you can look. If you go to the very top arrow, it says a search column. If you type in hashtag human rights, you will see everyone in the entire world that has tweeted something and hashtag human rights. So you can see what they're talking about, who's talking about it, photos with the hashtag and everything. So it's a quick 1 minute tutorial. So if you're my group, that's what we'll be focusing on. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Erica. So once again, purple is Swati, green is Felipe, pinkish-red is Donella, and blue is Erica, yellow is Crystal, and orange is Christina.
Should we give them a time?
So everybody, you have about 10 to 15 minutes within your groups to discuss, and then we expect you to come back and report to us from the floor. Thank you. I'm checking in to see if we're winding down and if we'll be ready in a couple of more minutes. Okay, groups, can we start winding down and identify your rapporteurs within your groups who will report back to us? Okay, can we have the rapporteurs? Well, there are not that many of us, so I think we can just...
Okay, should we start with the group here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Can I have everybody's attention? We're going to start the reporting process.
Okay. So they were answering questions 2 and 4. So we'll start with number 2. You can just press the button.
So maybe before you do that, you can tell us, read out the question so we know what you were answering. Can you raise your hand so that the technician can see that you need the mic?
Okay,
oh,
it's coming on. Okay.
Oh, okay. There. So our group addressed questions 2 and 4, and I'm going to highlight question 2. Please briefly discuss and exchange ideas on how your NGO currently contributes to promoting human rights for all. List human rights activities the members of your group plan to implement in 2014. So we have quite a diverse group, from a representative from Fordham University, Lehigh University, Ribbon International, Terra Mitra, and myself from World Evangelical Alliance. You know, we all mentioned that we're doing a variety of things, but one thing that we highlighted was the right to a safe environment, whether that be talking about climate change or talking about the use of drones and how that can be tied into the right to education. So educating people about their right to a safe environment, as I mentioned, environmental issues or the use of drones. Our organization in particular, we like to focus on religious liberty. And a lot of the things that we mentioned, some of our activities are workshops and panel discussions and things of that nature highlighting these issues. Thank you.
My name is Dan Coviello, and I'm a youth representative for Terra Mitra. Terra Mitra is based in India, and we focus on energy and forest conservation issues. Our question was number 4, which is, briefly explain how your NGO uses social media platforms to promote human rights. We were also prompted to construct some tweets, and I have some to share with all. To answer our question directly, our NGOs use social media in a variety of different ways. So one way that we use social media is volunteer outreach for the causes that we're looking to promote. And we also had 2 suggestions for other NGOs to use social media. One is to ask questions for increased engagement with your audience. It's more than just stating the facts. A second very important thing brought up was the along a similar line was telling stories as opposed to simply concepts, and that's something that was learned at a previous workshop, and it's echoed now today. And one other point that we brought up is the digital divide, and oftentimes there's an age gap that of skills knowing how to use social media. So that's something that we're seeking within our own organizations to ameliorate. And I will read one tweet that we constructed. Human rights violations are seen as a precursor to threats to peace and security. Hashtag DPINGO. And there's also several others. But thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I think that Dr. Norton also has some comments.
Yes, my name is Mary Norton, and I represent Felician College, which is the Franciscan College of New Jersey. And we just had an event at the college on human trafficking, particularly as it relates to the Super Bowl and what we are doing in New Jersey. And we had an assemblywoman speak who was very instrumental in drafting the new law that we have in New Jersey, which is an anti-trafficking law. And the students also made a video that is on YouTube. So I think it incorporates everything that you have just said as well. We used media, we used political people as well, and also our community. And it was sponsored by just about every department and every youth group within the college, too. So just to add to what you have said, thank you.
Thank you. Can we move on to Donella's group? So it's question number one, I believe, right?
Hello, good afternoon. I'm here representing our member groups and representing NGOs, our part of World Coalition Organization, Veterans for Peace, Delta Kappa, Kappa Nu, Honor Society, correct? And Madam? The Fraternity of Notre Dame. Our question that was given to us were question one and five. First question asks that, as you already know, the Office of the UN High Commissioners for Human Rights culminated celebrating over 20 years of human rights on December 10th. We should give tell on our organizations. I don't think this is a question. Okay, how do we envision, how does our group member, envision human rights? For the next 20 years, we asserted that that war and preventing it was a huge piece of human rights, and it, I believe, culminated roughly over time. And we can look back historically and see that peace was the end goal or the aftermath for any war or any crisis that has happened in the world. Then we reverted to and we asserted more on the education. The education holds a huge key into human rights, and it actually implores the idea of it, and it can help prevent conflict in situations that lead to violations of human rights. We listed a quote from His Excellency Ban Ki-moon, where he said, "Education is a human right," and that it advances human rights. Human rights is advanced through education, if we are keen on it, if we stick to it, and increase the literacy around the world. We also went into the generalization and perspective, like awareness is key. We talked about our generational, not just our the generational gap, but my generation, for instance. We are more self-aware of things, and we are more not just pragmatic, but we want to be involved more into the concerns and issues of human rights. And with our other point on the topic of water and resources, we want to get government and major corporations to become aware of the coercion system, of generally the water system and how it's affected. We are stakeholders. So the environment and the technical aspect of that, saving infrastructure and maintenance, contributes to human rights. And there's the grassroots aspect of it. And we also looked into human trafficking, sex, labor, and program prevention is key to direct us towards human rights. And we looked at the health the health system in the world, being aware of HIV/AIDS and prevention, and making that applicable to human rights, making a better health system available for people in and around the world. These are the things that can help advance human rights. That's our first question. Oh, sorry. And our second question, that would be number 5. Using the list of human rights issues detailed in today's program, please identify the issues our members, NGOs, can promote or identify. And we literally identified all of these, and I believe we are all in support of them. But we stated that as an institution, we generally are open to supporting all these components that address human rights. We also pointed out the justice system being held by government. That's important. The due process for human rights, being aware of that. When we go back to understanding more of the water resources and corrosion in the world, we have to understand that 35% of the world's doesn't have the proper or portable water and sanitation. And there's a problem with gender equality, and that needs to be noted as well under human rights. And lastly, human rights is a discipline that comes out of conflict. Stay noted under situations of war and trying to resolve it and bring about peace. Thank you.
Thank you for those very concrete points. I'm former UN Habitat, so for me, microphone. Mm-hmm. I said thank you. Can you hear me now?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you
for those very concrete points. I'm a former staff of UN Habitat, so for me, water is a right. I think it's something that's very important that most people don't really focus on. And I like to focus on gender equality and also education and awareness. One thing that I know I always think about is that human rights is a responsibility also. It's not just about having the rights, but also what we do with them. So now I think let's move on to the other group there. I'm looking at Catherine and Sheila. If you can tell us what you guys came up with.
I think the lovely young man there covered some of our points in number 5. Thank you. We had Roger, Joan, Judy, Margot, John Germain, and Andre Francois in our group from different organizations. And we looked at number 5. I'm going to repeat the question using the list of human rights issues detailed in today's programs. Please identify issues your NGO currently promotes. Please also enumerate human rights issues you would like to see incorporated into future NGO. And we ran the gamut of topics under the human rights list on the pages here. We came up with peace is a human right, not to be abused. We talked about prostitution and trafficking, how civil society and governments should be held responsible for ending these sorts of practices. We talked about gender equality, child rights, protecting women and girls' rights, I think the consensus was, and you all can correct me if I'm wrong, was that boys should be included. And one example was cited that in Afghanistan, the boys are being raped at an alarming rate, and in Egypt and other places also, this is happening. So therefore, when we talk about human rights and women's rights, although all rights are everybody's rights, that the group would like for DPI briefing to discuss these issues in one of the briefings, workshops, or whatever it is at length. Boys have the same rights as girls. And we need to look at the gender biases where that is concerned. Education and security, and some of it I can't read.
Including media.
Media at every level. I'm a media person. Media at every level of negotiation. Because it's good and well enough for civil society to come here and be a part of the Department of Public Information. But outside media is not included. It's not a part of what's going on. And in the field, coming from peacekeeping here at the UN, it's very important to include the media at all level of negotiation and not to give them a carrot, but to let them know how important it all this is. Because we need to, of course, you know what the media does, open up awareness. Media can hold workshops and to take actions. And another thing we talked about was legal aid clinics. I remember that in Sierra Leone, our human rights section in the peacekeeping there set up LACLA in Sierra Leone. And when I went back to Sierra Leone to run some 1325 workshops later on, this LACLA was still sustainable. It was working. So I think more of this need to happen in general to address impunity, punishment, which the group stressed a lot, prevention and punishment for those who perpetrate and abuse human rights. Thank you.
Thank you. Lots of very interesting topics there. So I think we'll just move on to Erica's group and hear from them.
Hello, my name is Daniel Conway. I'm with group four. Beg your pardon. In my group, we have Cecilia from Foundations for Support for the UN and Julia from Mary Knoll Sisters. In general, though we ended up with social media, we don't use as much of it as is the norm. It's just the way we operate. My college does use social media. It uses it mostly to coordinate events, so you're not going to be seeing discussions of things over social media. There are actually discussions in physical locations. All of our organizations do achieve a lot. We did go over social media, though. We went over Twitter, especially. It was actually very interesting. Some of the things we learned. One of the interesting parts was how you have to be careful of what you name your Twitter account, and simply because the meanings of words do change, I believe, and there are hidden connotations to what otherwise would be benign, or which naturally stood out the most in my mind. Also, we talked about some of the hazards of having a Twitter account, how you don't really control the content on a Twitter account. Other people can. However, we also learned about how to get it started as a normal procedure. For example, you don't start it at the time. You've got to plan ahead, which I found interesting. Is there anything I'm missing, Julia? Should I wrap up? Should I talk about our various organizations or? Oh, well, I think that actually will be all.
Well, thank you. I'm going to have to go back and look at my Twitter account and to really be a bit more cautious in terms of how I'm using it, because it's something that all of a sudden I'm hooked on, and I get a lot of my news from there in terms of what's happening not only in the UN but also in other places. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shall we do the last group that's with Crystal? Crystal?
In my group, we discussed question number three, and we were having a conversation on how the NGOs here can collaborate to promote and protect human rights in the upcoming year. So I have here with me Miriam from the Association of Women in Psychology. I have Norma Smith, National Council of Negro Women, and Joe Albright from Mary Knoll Missionaries. I'm going to have Miriam to discuss about what we were saying here.
Hello. It's a privilege to be last because I will only have very few things to say since you guys already said most of the things we were going to talk about. But I wanted to give an example. As a member of a feminist organization, the Association for Women in Psychology, as one of the first NGOs, really feminist NGOs, to join the UN, we follow human rights. We are a non-hierarchy organization, which means we don't even have a president. Those who serve on the board are just as similar as any of the members, and everybody has the same say and all of that good stuff. And in one of my, just recently in one of our conferences, I was talking about human rights. I was in a presentation presenting human rights. And at the end of the presentation, I had a person come to me who was an older woman on a wheelchair. And she came to commend me on touching on human rights on a deeper level, not just the right to freedom, to worship whoever we want, the right to walk on the street, I was talking more about the right to raise a child, even that I have a mental illness, the right to have a partner, even that, you know. So we were talking about deeper issues in human rights. This woman approached me and she said that as she was checking in the hotel that same day that she was coming to the conference, she waited in line just like other good citizens. When her turn came, the receptionist and the person behind her started making business together, ignoring totally that it was really her turn. She was totally invisible to them. I give you this example because we are really big on human rights. When it comes to human rights, it is of utmost importance to check ourselves first. Do we know what human rights are? Stemming from that level, because we all know, we talk about it. Even the ones we know that know about human rights sometimes fall back and they need a refresher. So to make a very long story a little bit shorter, because I know you're all hungry, want to go to lunch, we decided to use concrete ways in order to use education, as if we have, I believe, a training coming up in the spring to come to the NGOs. We need to know what human rights are first, and then we need to seize those opportunities. We need to live up to them as we are spreading the word around our own constituents. When we learn about those things, we will be more able to catch ourselves if we are biased, and to catch others and teach them and train them that human rights is not only about, you know, being equal, men and women being equal, or children having rights, or the UNESCO, or the UNRWA, or all of that. It is going deep in the fact that there is no life that is more important than another. Even if that life happens to be in India for a little girl who's working with needles, her life could be much more important than any of us sitting in this room, only because of what she delivers in terms of merit and help to others. So this is where I really wanted, this is a very good opportunity for us to go back and test our human rights. What do we know about human rights? What does it mean to have a human rights? And after those 2 or 3 hours training that I hope we all can be involved in, it, it's not just going to be a speaker, it's going to be a form of exercises where people actually practice those things and catch themselves doing those things. And then we will be better practitioners of human rights. Thank you. I promise to be brief, and I talk too much. I'm sorry.
Thank you. Can you hear me? I can't tell because you're not smiling.
That's better now.
Now you're smiling. Actually, thank you. That actually is a really good note to end on because it's a personal story, and it's really looking at the deeper issues. So, I mean, we thank you for that. And I invite you to, please give us that information for the training, and that's something that we could circulate and to see how we as partners and NGOs can also participate. Now, what I want to say is that, first of all, to thank you for your patience, because I know that it's hard to continue you know, in a second stage when we had such a wonderful speaker and we have a break of momentum. But we really felt strongly in the NGO section that we wanted to find a way where we could talk and network outside of the podium. So we don't know if this is the best way. We just put something together and threw it out at you. We want to have suggestions, you know, help us to figure out how best we can find time when we can talk and really get to know what personal stories and personal activities are being done to promote not only human rights, but any issue that we're handling. So going into 2014, we're going to hope to have smaller sessions of follow-up meetings where we might, you know, just talk and do some practical stuff, exchange ideas, whether it's on juvenile justice, human rights, or some of the issues I hear people want to hear about, child bride in the coming future, where we can really just get to know what we're doing and really, you know, work together around these very important issues to all of us. So please feel free. Write us, you know, our generic email. I don't know if I can remember it. I think it's undpingo@un.org. Please, you know, grab one of us and tell us what you think. Give us some ideas so that we can really work together to improve the way that we are collaborating and supporting the work of the UN. Now, is there anything else? We have a question from the floor.
I have a question. When is the schedule coming out for the spring and the winter?
I don't know. Well, you know, from the experience we've had, we've been talking about this a lot because we put out the provisional agenda for the whole year. And I don't want to tell you how many times we've had to pull it down and make changes because different things happen. For example, the session happened today, but at the last minute, we had the switch, as you know, because of Mandela's funeral. So going into 2014, we're trying to decide, do we want to put out the agenda as we normally do? Mm-hmm. For example, perhaps the first week of January? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to do something different? Perhaps at a monthly frequency, put out the calendar for January, and then as we move forward, you know, by the end of January, put it out for December. Because I've found myself going back way too many times to change things. So let me hear what you have to say.
My reason is those of us who commute into the city and have other activities, and you're only meeting three Thursdays a month, we'd like to know what Thursdays you're meeting so we can plan our time ahead. And my calendar is like a three-month calendar in advance, so I'd like to have those dates. Maybe not the what's going to go on them, but these are the dates for the sessions. Thank you.
We know when January will start. I'm hearing from my partner here in crime. And so we have the dates already, and we will continue in the new year for having briefings three times a month. So we can put out the dates, but even that changes sometimes. So we can put something out and continue to say that it's provisional, but we, you know, we still need to have some discussion with that, some working arrangements. And I understand. Guess what? I almost didn't come in today also, because I almost decided to stay home with my son and do something different. So I do understand. I feel what you're saying. We'll do our best as we go into 2014 to get the dates out promptly so you'll be able to fix your agendas. It's something that we're still discussing. So I hope that the team, before Christmas and our Christmas party next week on the 16th, they will be able to come out with some final decision that will be pleasing to everybody. Thank you.
The schedule is important to know, and the program is important. And today was an excellent example of a change in speakers didn't impair the quality of the program at all. He was wonderful, and it was right on target. So for those of us who encourage others to attend, particularly students, knowing the theme helps us make it a much more enhanced experience for them by either assigning assignments before or planning lectures around the topic, so I think that's very helpful. And, of course, we understand it's always provisional. But today was excellent.
Wasn't easy.
I'm sure. But it didn't suffer at all, I don't think.
What I can say is that the NGO Relation has been actively listening to you today, not only about the agenda, but everything that you have said. And that's why we had this activity, so that we have time to really directly talk to you on issues of your concern, or just on, you know, whatever feedback you think we may be able to use. Because it's not just about us. It's about the whole group together making it work. So we are listening. I'm not the only one. We have a group of people here. I know you know the people, Crystal, Swati, who's here, Christina, Felipe, all the people who are working with you. So we are taking all the information, all the feedback you're giving us, and we hope that we'll be able to come back fairly shortly to give you the information and the good service that you have been used to having. Now, what I should let you know is that December 19, it's already on the agenda, it's the final session for the year, and we're going to try to use it as a feedback, a two-way feedback session, where we want to introduce everybody really in the office so you know what we're doing, not just catching us as we're going by in the hallway or in the briefing, but really talk to us and to give you an idea of some of the changes that we've made, in case you haven't noticed, and to really talk to you, hear from you, how you want us to continue going into 2014. So please make sure that you're here next week and, you know, tell more friends, more NGO representatives, so we can really, really work together in terms of making it really a good process. Really, that's all I can say. I don't know if any other colleagues, Mary, has something else to add. Anybody else from the NGO Relations section? I must say we have a really great team. There are not that many of us, but when we get together, we multiply and we deliver. Thank you very much for being with us today, and I hope to see you again next week. Please don't forget to go to the Rwanda session. I only have 8 people. I'm going to be honest. So it's going to be in the NGO Relations section over in our office in the Resource Center. And it's really the advocacy arm of DPI reaching out to people to work with you to help to really plan this really very important commemoration next year. So if you have time, please stop by. It's going to be from 1 to 2. So that's why I want you guys to grab a sandwich also. Okay? So we need... The first one in January, well, again, it's undecided. I'm sorry to come on again. We are looking at January 15th because we have to get the schedule of our Undersecretary General, because what we plan is to have him to do a one-on-one like today with civil society. So it's either going to be on the 15th of January or the 30th of January. What I can tell you already for January is on the 23rd, we're working along with the Holocaust Remembrance Program of DPI, and we're going to be doing a program on the 23rd on Hungarian, the journey of Hungarian Jews. So we know that's going on for January. Oh, great, good.